Welcome back to the Women's Vitality Summit, Caring for Yourself, Body, and Soul. This is Dr. Keisha Ewers, and I am your host today. And my guest for this segment is Ajayan Boris, who is the author of Effortless Mind Meditate with Ease book. He has instructed and guided thousands of meditation students in North America, Australia, Europe, and India, and he's the host of Mind Matters Radio on Alternative Talk Radio. He teaches workshops and retreats on meditation and spiritual relationships in the Pacific Northwest and in the Himalayas. And I'm really happy to have him on this summit because we are always hearing that meditation is a really important part of stress control and reduction and how we deal with it. But most people, when they hear the word meditation, their eyes just cross and they think, oh no, one more thing. So I invited Ajayan onto the summit to give you a really accessible, effortless method for you to be able to control your internal alarm system so that you're not constantly stressed out. So I always start the summit interviews with the word vitality. This is the Women's Vitality Summit. And vitality means the power giving continuance of life present in all things. It's your sparkle, it's your glow, it's your exuberance. And so, Ajayan, welcome to the summit.
Thank you, Keisha. Glad to be here.
I want to start with, what do you see as the biggest vitality sucker out there with the people that you run into that you're teaching meditation to? And then in life in general, what would you say drains women's vitality faster than anything?
Wow, good question. Well, first off, I think not only women, but both men and women nowadays, stress is a huge thing, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and there's stress comes in all forms, relationship stress, job stress, the stress that you have with just running around and getting everything done, children, handling the kids, preparing meals, doing your work. Most families are two-income families nowadays, so it is really hectic for both men and women, but I think actually especially for women, because studies have shown that they are still the ones on point for the most part to keep the household together as well as working in their careers. So that's a double whammy.
I call this bringing home the bacon, frying it up in a pan, and having to look hot at the same time.
Exactly.
Juggling right. A computer on one hip and a baby on the other one.
Right. Mm. Now, the good news is that I do find that women are more apt to be seeking a solution to this, which I think is really wonderful.
Now, why do you say that?
Well, simply because in my observations, about, I would say, at least 80% of the people who come to my classes are women. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to other teachers in the area of self-development and all of that, and they experience the same thing.
Oh, by far. Workshops I give, mostly women.
Yes.
Patients that come into my clinic, women first, mostly, for the most part. Mm-hmm. And then they bring their spouse in and their children. But women are the healthcare consumers. They're the ones that are into transformational work. They're the ones that are saying, there is a problem. I would like to find a solution. So I think you're right on. I just wanted to know,
yes,
how you got to that.
Right. And I think that's just, wonderful. I really admire that, because there's something about the male ego that seems to resist that. And that is why they have to be dragged around from workshop to workshop by their wife. So when it comes to the stress that we just were talking about, obviously, there's been so much scientific research that has shown that meditation is a wonderful method to address this problem. And it gives you a state of deep rest and relaxation, reduces anxiety, depression, just all the effects of stress, because you're basically turning on that parasympathetic aspect of the nervous system and, quieting down that sympathetic aspect, the fight or flight aspect. So you're the parasympathetic is just the opposite of that, as you well know.
So to define that a little bit better for listeners that aren't familiar with these terms, the body has in its nervous system the ability to either fight or flee or freeze in the face of danger, or the saber-toothed tiger, right? We are wired this way. And it also has the nervous system that will kick in to rest and digest, or what we call feed and breed. And that's the parasympathetic nervous system. It's mm-hmm. where the body feels safe, the mind feels safe, and has told the body it's safe so that it can actually be okay to engage in reproduction. So sex is on the table, on the menu now, because you're in this space where you know it's safe to reproduce. You can actually sit on the toilet and have a bowel movement. When you're in fight or flight, it's not safe if you're a zebra being chased by a lion to even stop and go to the bathroom. So constipation is one of the most common effects of the internal alarm system going off over and over and over again in that fight or flight. So meditation, as you just noted, has a ton of research behind it for engaging this very unutilized side of our nervous system. Mm-hmm. We really don't have that many opportunities anymore. And I think in generations before us, women have had opportunities to get the kids out the door to school, sit and have tea with the neighbors, you know, sit down and read a little bit, really take some time off, put the feet up, and let the body know, okay, this is rest time. But we live in this really frenetic culture now that is really reinforcing productivity, you know, saying that this is what you're supposed to do. And women are known for multitasking, and so they do it really well. Mm-hmm. So by doing meditation, you're saying that that allows the body to recover.
Exactly. And it doesn't take a lot of time. That's the other thing about it. You might think, well, how do I fit meditation in? Even 10, 15 minutes can give you a really deep sense of rest, relaxation, a sense of well-being that you can carry into your activity in the rest of the day. So it doesn't take a huge investment. However, knowing how to meditate well, you could say, is important. There's a lot of things go by the name of meditation. You might just pick up a book and sit down and try something, or in a yoga class, learn some little something that they call meditation. Typically, those won't give you that really deep sense of rest and relaxation. So it is good to get proper instruction.
Now, meditation, when I start teaching it to my patients or I mention it, my patients' eyes will cross and they kind of go, are you kidding me? I have to do one more thing. Do you know what you're doing to me right now? Mm. And I can see their stress levels go up. I can watch the blood pressure rise in front of my eyes. And they say to me, I hear this all the time. I can't even count how many times I've heard it. And you've probably heard it a lot too. I'm not a good meditator. My mind is too busy. I can't make it shut up. And I've never been good at this. Mm. So I would love for you to talk about some of the myths of meditation, because this is, I think, the number one myth. That in order to meditate, there's a way to do it right. And I'll put that in air quotes. And the right way is to have your mind be without thought. Mm-hmm. So will you address that?
Sure. That is probably the number one myth. And actually, as long as you have a mind, you're going to have thoughts. This is just the nature of the human mind. And so the way I like to explain it is, well, first off, let me just say that thoughts are a part of the meditation. There is not a single human being on this earth that sits there and meditates in a thoughtless space for, you know, for half an hour or an hour or whatever length of time. We all have thoughts if we have a mind. But the thing about it is, I like to use a metaphor, that the mind is like an ocean. It's an ocean of consciousness. And that is pretty accurate. And on the surface of that ocean, we have thought waves. And for the most part, we tend to live on that surface of the ocean, going from thought wave to thought wave. Now, when you start to meditate, that is analogous to diving beneath the surface, like dipping into the silent depths of the mind. And as soon as you do that, you experience inner silence. You experience that relaxation, that rest that we're talking about. But it doesn't mean that the whole ocean has to become completely still. So you still will have some thought waves on the periphery as you take this dive deeper and deeper into that ocean, that silent ocean of consciousness. And that is tremendously restoring and energizing and relaxing. And you simply have to know that those thoughts in the periphery are fine. They're okay. And in fact, there's actually a lot more to it than this. And I don't know if you, Keisha, if you'd like me to go a little deeper into this. It gets very interesting when you really look at the mechanics of meditation. You see that it is, again, kind of analogous to the sleep state. when you go to sleep at night, okay, you're tired at the end of your day, you fall asleep. Now, it's not just that you enter into 8 hours of unconsciousness. Sleep is a very complex process, and you go through phases of deep, dreamless sleep, and that is where you probably get the deepest state of metabolic rest. And then you'll go through phases where there is a dream state, typically in the REM phase of sleep, rapid eye movement. And both aspects of sleep are really important to the restoration of your, you know, body and mind, right? So in fact, they've done studies and they know that if they interrupt the dream state consistently so that you get no dreaming state, then you can become mentally imbalanced, even psychotic. So that dream state is just as important as the deep dreamless state for the restoration of the brain chemistry. Now, likewise, in meditation, you have cycles. You will go through phases of the meditation where you feel very deep and you're having a really deep, clear experience. And then you'll have phases where you have more thoughts. And again, just like with sleep, that rest of the meditation, it's a whole package. And the process of purification and rejuvenation is going on during both phases. And again, you can go into this even deeper and really analyze this, but just that's enough for now to know that actually the thoughts in meditation serve a purpose, much like the dream state in sleep.
Okay, now I'm going to back this up a little bit, and I'm going to explain this for our listeners in another way, and that is, what I always tell women who come in seeking hormone therapy, replacement therapy from me, and we find out, you know, I'll say, okay, well, let's do some testing, and we'll do some testing, and we'll find out where their adrenal glands are at, where their thyroid is at, and insulin levels, as well as ovarian hormones. Mm-hmm. So when you start thinking about the whole endocrine system like this, any kind of hormone is actually a messenger chemical. It's telling the body what to do. Well, where it begins is in the mind. Okay, so in the mind, you have these neurotransmitters that are messenger chemicals, and they alert the body what to do next. And those are started by your perceptions. So if you perceive something in front of you to be dangerous or stressful or annoying or frustrating or sad or hurtful or any of those things, a different cocktail of neurotransmitters will be released to tell the body what to do than if you perceive something as loving and compassionate and joyful and connecting and emotionally stabilizing. Another set of neurotransmitters or messenger chemicals will be released from the brain to tell the body what to do in response to that perception. So everything begins in the endocrine system from your perceptions. Mm. And so that's really, really important. So when you're sitting in meditation, if you perceive that a thought coming up is a bad thing, if you're going to label it and judge it as, I can't do this, I'm terrible at this, I can't make these dumb thoughts shut up, right? Mm-hmm. Then you're actually sending down to the body this message that is annoying, frustrating, right? Disturbing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so you're going to have a different set of messenger chemicals released from your brain to respond to that, and your body will be squirrely. It'll be all about getting away from this. And so if one of the things I love that you teach, Ajayan, is that when thoughts come up, don't judge them. It's okay. They're mm-hmm. just a thought, you know, and it'll just keep on going. But if you get wound up with the thought and start judging yourself for having the thought, or that you can't do this, or you suck at this, and I've never been able to do this, right? Anything that we do like that is going to send these hormones out of kilter. And meditation, that becomes counterproductive. That's not why you're sitting, right?
Exactly. And not only is it okay to have thoughts, but the point I was making just a minute ago is that it actually is the sort of mental byproduct of the physical purification that's happening that gives you the benefits of meditation. So you can feel totally good. If you have a meditation where you're having tons of thoughts, you should come out of that meditation and think, wow, I got rid of a lot of stuff. I released a lot of stuff. And you'll feel the benefits of that. But so, yeah, it's exactly what you say. And that develops a kind of dispassion towards thoughts in the meditation that allows you to enjoy your meditation and go deeper and deeper despite the thoughts.
Now, to me, meditation without integration is useless. So you have that time where your body does calm down, but then if you can't take the calm from, you just said 10 minutes is enough. Mm-hmm. So if for your, let's say that you're up for 18 hours, which is too many hours to be awake and going, but that's kind of what I see a lot with my patient population. So we can even be generous and say you're up for 12, 14, 16, or 18 hours, right? And during that time, if all you got was 10 minutes of calming your body and not judging your thoughts, it's not enough. Mm-hmm. So integration becomes really powerful if you can take that feeling that you got and that non-judgmental attachment to your thoughts and say, oh yeah, thoughts are just thoughts and I don't have to attach to them and I don't have to give them so much weight. Then you're integrating in your upright life, the time when you're not on your cushion. And to me, this is what you bring into places that are stressful, like your work environment, your home environment, your relationships, whatever's going on, is to bring that into a stressful situation, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And that's why mindfulness has become so popular right now, because people are finding that they, in the midst of their day, as they experience the stress of living, they can become mindful and go back to their breathing, something simple like that, just to detach a little bit from the stressful experience of that moment and just feel their being. And that can, you know, detach them from that. So that's perfect. Yes. That integration is what it's all about. Yeah.
All right. So I was talking to you. You were asking me what I would like for you to cover on the summit for our female listeners. So we mm-hmm. have all these women. It's the Women's Vitality Summit. And I said, I want you to talk to their pain. Mm. And one of the things that I hear from women often that you wouldn't normally link to meditation as an intervention is stress and urinary incontinence. Mm. So when a woman has had, like I've had four vaginal births, right? Jumping on a trampoline with my youngest daughter and all of a sudden peeing my pants a little bit and going, oh no. You know, I was only in my late 30s when this happened and I knew I had decades ahead of me of having this get worse and worse if I didn't do something about it. So one of the things that you can do is enhance your sex life, help your vaginal health, increase your vaginal wall strength. You can reverse stress urinary incontinence, all of these things through a technique that you teach mm-hmm. in your meditation that I started doing years ago. And I am not going to say that this technique will reverse severe stress urinary incontinence if you've got organs that are starting to prolapse or fall because of lack of estrogen. There are stronger things that you can do. I'm a big fan of the jade egg, Benoit balls, or the Kegel Master, where you're actually taking your vagina to the gym, you know, and you're working with resistance training. But this technique that you teach is a great start towards bringing awareness to the circular muscles that are inside the vaginal wall. Mm-hmm. And who knew that meditation could be such a great thing for this? So I'd like for you to talk about this technique. And I think your free gift that you're offering our listeners includes how to do this. So that's going to be a bonus. You can strengthen your vagina with your free gift.
Exactly. Now, mind you, I came to this from an entirely different route. And what you're talking about is what's called Mula Bandha. And Mula means root. Just like when you say the Muladhara chakra, that's the root chakra.
In Sanskrit.
In Sanskrit, right. Mm-hmm. And so Mula Bandha, Mula is root, Bandha is lock. And so it's a process of locking the muscles or contracting the muscles of the perineum, that perineum floor there. So
what is the perineum?
Well, the perineum is the space between the anus and the genitals, right?
Right.
And so... And this is surprisingly, you know, very much like the Kegel exercise that Dr. Kegel developed, but it was known by the yogis for many centuries before that as Mula Bandha. And this is an exercise that the yogis do. It's considered a master key for awakening subtle energies in the body and directing them upwards to clear and open the chakras. So
you're going to have to define chakra for listeners that haven't heard of this before.
Okay. All right. If you haven't heard of chakras, essentially, to put it simply, it's just a centers of energy, consciousness in the body. And there are seven primary chakras, other sort of secondary chakras, and these are located along from the perineum up to the crown of the head and along the spine.
So there are many more chakras than these seven, and they're located along the spinal column physiologically. And if you think about Chinese medicine or Ayurvedic medicine, they have a really deep understanding of the nervous system, and that in chiropractic medicine also, that all nerves lead to the spinal cord. So if you think about this, this is big bundles of nerves with lots and lots of energy that join along the spinal column, and each area going up the spinal column from your genitals up to the top of your head has a different energy flow because different parts of your body are joining here. So that's called a chakra or a wheel of energy.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so this technology evolved in the East as a way of deepening meditation. And so that's how I came onto it. But it has these other benefits that you mentioned. It does strengthen the vaginal walls, as you talked about, and can help with incontinence and all of that. So, and actually can increase the pleasure of orgasm. I mean, it has many benefits. Mm-hmm. So, but as far as meditation goes, it kind of opens the experience of meditation to make meditation deeper and easier. And that is one other thing that we hadn't touched on when you talked about myths about meditation. I did want to mention another big myth is that meditation is somehow difficult to do. Mm. Actually, the most effective meditation is absolutely effortless. It's when you basically fall into that meditative state. And so in fact, I would go so far as to say that any meditation that really works well is going to be effortless, because what meditation is shifting from the waking state of consciousness into that meditative state. And whenever you shift from the waking state into another state of consciousness, whether it's meditation or sleep or dreaming, it has to be effortless.
I like what you say about this, because anyone that tries to meditate won't succeed. Anyone that tries to fall asleep won't succeed.
Exactly.
Anyone that tries to have an orgasm won't succeed. Mm-hmm. These are all three really wonderful experiences of surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that until you feel what surrender feels like, where you just let go and allow your body to fall into, as you said, the state of bliss and being really connected with your interior world, then you don't understand what surrender really means. Because often it's used in war, right? I surrender.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going from the state of war into I surrender, but I'm not really happy about it. Right?
Right.
But in this case, surrender means just letting go, mm-hmm. falling into, letting your mind just stop what it's fighting against, right?
Yeah, you're releasing something that is held more in a bounded, rigid state, and that actually feels good.
Mm-hmm.
It is a release. It's an opening, and it actually, you know, feels wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing about meditation. A lot of people have the idea that it requires a lot of discipline. Well, it does require the discipline to sit down and do it, but once you're doing it, it is that release. It does feel wonderful, opening, kind of blissful. There is something most definitely pleasant about the experience. And so it is self-reinforcing. And you'll find that you, after you've tasted that a number of times, that you really want to meditate, and it's easy to make it a priority.
I think one of the things that gets in the way of that is the ego's drive to have to perform and achieve or do or take care of people or get your task list done. I know this from personal experience.
Mm.
When, for me, meditation is a luxury. For you, meditation is breath,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I make sure that I have to, it is a discipline for me to carve out that space and time and not think about the encroachment of all of the things that have to get done. And the way that I explain this to my patients and the women that I work with is If I were to diagnose you with breast cancer tomorrow, all of the things that are encroaching that you think are so important and you're giving so much priority to as more important than this kind of work would go away. You reprioritize instantly when you have a diagnosis like that. Hmm. All of a sudden, all of the things on your task list, all the things that you thought were so imperative to get finished, they go away. You all of a sudden understand they're not priorities. They're not that important. And they're not going to feed your spirit and your soul in the way that meditation can.
Wow, beautiful. I love that. I've never heard that expressed that way, and that's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
So don't wait till you get diagnosed, you guys. Please, this is my way of doing things. I call it the hot stove person, where you have to actually get burned before you'll stop. So I had to get rheumatoid arthritis before I learned how to meditate. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's really necessary.
Right, right. Yeah. Beautiful. One other thing I was going to say is, because this is all about vitality, I find, and the people I've taught meditation to will find, that meditation is a wonderful source of, it's a wonderful way to find your own vitality, your inherent vitality. Because what obscures that oftentimes is stress. That's the first thing. So if you can dissolve that stress, you can access your own inner energy and sort of pure motivation, your own pure creativity that then you can start to express, and that energizes you, expressing your creativity, experiencing that. And of course, just the deep rest is very energizing. So it is a wonderful way to revitalize and connect with that vitality.
Well, to revisit your ocean metaphor, I don't know who counts these things, but I've heard a statistic that says 94% of all thoughts are recycled. You've had them a million times before. They're just cycling through once again, and you're spending energy and time on them. And 6% of these new thoughts may not have any gems or pearls in them. But if the ocean floor is calm enough, then you can allow the 6% to rise through the 94% of garbage that keeps on going, the flotsam and jetsam. Mm-hmm. And in that 6% that can come up into your awareness, there might be something really useful in there. And that's why meditation is so important for your own creative endeavors. If you're always on the hamster wheel and you're just going and your heart rate's up and you're breathing and you're sweating and you can't think really clearly, then you're not going to be creative. Actually, it's shooting yourself in the foot to try and get so-called things done, right, in this way. If you take that time and you allow yourself to sit and percolate and let these new thoughts come up, you may just well have discovered your newest mission in life. You may have written your new book. You may have solved the problem that you've been chewing on for the last month, right? And you have a solution presented in front of you in what's called an epiphany, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so many, you know, in the literature on the creative process, there's many accounts of people having their biggest revelations, scientists, artists, having their greatest insights and revelations when they were in just a state of relaxation, not trying to solve a problem. And I can tell you from personal experience, I've written a number of books, and I find by far the most creative time of my day is when I'm meditating and I'm getting, I hate to say it, lots of ideas. Sometimes I've even had a notepad next to me while I meditate.
No, I hate to say that.
Well, only because it sounds a little contradictory because of the idea that you should have a kind of quiet mind, and here I'm having all
but
these great creative ideas.
But you just got done saying that thoughts
That's
are good.
That's right, folks. That's right. I tripped up on my own ideas there. But actually, yes, it's absolutely true. It's a very, your mind at the deeper layers of the mind, that's where there's much more creative juice. And there's much more of a kind of holistic level of thinking at those subtle layers of thought, because the thoughts are not so rigidly bound as they are at the surface of the mind. So they're more expansive, more abstract, more all-encompassing. So you start to see how this relates to this and this connects to this. You get this creative juices flowing that way.
Well, in Ayurvedic medicine, the sister science of yoga that came from India many thousands of years ago, the rishis or the ancient sages who wrote about Ayurveda over several hundred years, they just sat. You know, they sat and observed. They observed humans in their interaction with the elements, the universe that they lived in, each other, plant material, animal life, you know, and they wrote about it and saw patterns as they emerged. Well, one of the things that they talked about are what are called the panchakoshas, or five layers of your body, five sheaths. Mm-hmm. And so we're really connected to and very aware of our physical body. It's the one that can taste, feel, smell, touch, hear, right? Mm-hmm. And we believe the information that comes in through those five senses, and we tend to kind of link to that and say, this is real. But the problem with that is you actually have four more layers to you. And Kirlian photography has picked up the second layer, and we call it your electromagnetic energy field in Western science. Ayurveda calls it, and yoga calls it, your prana layer. Chinese medicine calls it your qi. It's that energy layer that's the next layer to you. And we're pretty familiar with that now, too, because we've actually seen it documented in photography, right? So, again, coming through the five senses, now we can prove it. But then after that, we also have an emotional and a mental layer, a wisdom body, and then access to all of knowledge that's out there. It's called your collective human unconsciousness, right? Hmm. And I call it your connection to the divine. It's that access to the epiphanies, to the inspiration, to the great ideas. And if you're toxic in any of those other four layers before that portal where you can reach that space, then you're not as likely to get a good, consistent flow of ideas and, you know, the solace from your connection to God. So that being said, meditation is a great way, as you said, you're purifying your thoughts. It's a great way to detox these other layers so that you can then have that access to the collective consciousness of humanity.
Exactly.
There's no new idea. There are no new ideas out there. They are the ideas that come from your own context, your own life, and the wisdom that we've all got access to. So meditation is the space to gather that in.
Beautiful. Yeah, I like the way you say that. In fact, that's exactly how yoga philosophy expresses it, that we already have everything within us. We have the infinite within us. We don't have to develop anything, other capacities. It's all there. What we do need to do is clear the obstructions that keep that infinitude from shining through our personality, our mind, our heart. And so that's what all the spiritual practices are exist for, is to just clear those obstructions, to purify. And so then we reveal our true self.
Now, we're talking about words that can make some people uncomfortable, right? So it doesn't matter what word I choose, if I say the divine, or if I say God, or if I say energy, or if I say collective unconsciousness, someone out there is going to not resonate with those words. And is meditation a religion? Does it go against religious belief, no matter what your religion is?
Well, it certainly doesn't go against religious belief, because, I mean, if you look at all the major religious traditions of the world, especially those that have some sort of mystical component, you see that meditation is really at the heart of those spiritual traditions. In every major tradition, there are the so-called saints, you know, the so-called mystics who have related their experience of higher consciousness, divine union, and so on. And so that, for them, the experience of the divine, of higher power, of whatever you want to call it, is an actual living, vital experience. And the way they got to that point is by, through spiritual practice that made, that purified, that made their mind and heart very subtle to the point where they could experience the divine right here on this earth. And so it's actually not only against religion, it's absolutely for religion, you know.
Yeah, it's not against religion.
No.
Which is what you just said. So meditation.
Not against religion.
Right. Yeah. Meditation strengthens whatever religious path or spiritual path you're following.
Right.
And, you know, the contemplative traditions, which are done by the mystics of every spiritual path, exactly what you just said, they find their source inside of them. They're connecting from them into that divine source. And that's the feeding yourself, right? Taking care of yourself. Really understanding that you're a spirit on this planet having a human experience. And if you can get into that perspective and that paradigm of being in your life, you don't get so wound up with stress. And I think that is such an amazing solution for increasing vitality, is to really come back to the fact that the divine lives inside of each one of us, and meditation is a pathway in, into that. And that we are each a part of God, whether we consider ourselves children of God or a part of the light of the divine, whatever the languaging is, it's all inside of us. And I think that's such an important piece that meditation allows us to find and discover for ourselves.
I love what you said. In a way, it's we become more stressed when our perspective becomes smaller.
Right.
Like when we get caught in the small, tiny boundaries of paying this bill and paying that bill and whatever is else is on our plate in our life. But when we expand our perspective to the point that, yes, I am a spiritual being having a human experience, and somehow that connects us with something larger. And ironically, as you also said, that larger perspective comes about as we go within. So you might think going within is taking it to smaller, but actually within you is the infinite. So that actually expands you. If you connect with your core, with your source, you become larger and your perspective becomes bigger and your stress in life starts to melt away.
Beautiful. So I would love for you to give our listeners a taste. Do you mind doing like a little guided meditation? And then your bonus that you're giving them is a guided meditation that they can then have. So they just go to your website and we'll give all of this information on your, on the speaker's page where you'll be highlighted. And I know you have a membership site where people can actually study with you and go as deep as they want to with their meditation practice, having video guidance and more. You want to talk about that?
Sure. Well, yes, for years I've taught meditation in person in live classes, and I've done it all over the world. And that's very limiting in this, in a couple of ways. One, you can only teach the people who are right in front of you and physically present. And two, once they're done with the course, they go off with their lives. And that sort of support that I would like to keep giving them is kind of hard. You know, it's hard for them to keep connected and coming back for more support.
Well, I hear this from my patients with their diets too, right?
Yeah.
When they go on vacation or there's a birthday or there's a holiday, then they get off the wagon, so to speak, and they say, and I'm going to put this in air quotes, that they've been bad. And I really, please, I resist this so much. Please never judge yourself as good or bad. That's just a trap, right? And so when they're bad, they also stop their spiritual practice. You know, any time where they're going within, meditation, contemplation, prayer, whatever it is that they're doing that's bringing them some peace, that also seems to go out the window, along with the healthy diet and the exercise program, everything that's self-care oriented, right? And the byline of the summit is caring for yourself, body and soul, which is exactly, meditation takes it through body, mind, heart, spirit, right? So go ahead and let's talk
about the membership.
You do this, how the membership site works a little bit, and then I'll have you do a guided piece.
Okay. Yeah. So I just recently developed this membership site where I teach with video courses so you can learn at your own pace, you know, in the comfort of your home. Not only the basic course, but if you want to, then you can go on to more, you know, in-depth courses. And you can get the sort of daily support for your practice that I've always wanted to give. So guided meditations for different purposes, like for abundance, for healing, for developing compassion, that kind of thing, many different guided meditations, but also really solid just instruction that teaches you, gives you the really thorough understanding of your meditation and the mechanics of meditation so that you can really have a solid practice. So I'm really excited about that. And the nice part about it is the membership, the cost of it is less for a year, is less than just what my live course, a single, you know, course would be. So, so it's actually much more economical and it gives you much more support and instruction. So I'm pretty excited about that. And that's at ajayan.com.
So you want to spell your name?
A-J-A-Y-A-N, ajayan.com. Yep. All right. So as far as a guided meditation, sure, I'd be happy to. How long do we have?
Well, why don't you do a chakra opening meditation since we talked about that? And then the guided meditation that you're giving as a gift includes the how to take your vagina to the gym, the Mula Bandha.
Right.
So we won't do that part.
Okay.
With this. We'll do some chakra opening.
All right. Beautiful. Okay. So first, I want everyone who's listening to sit comfortably. That's really important. Don't think you have to in fact, you can be in a chair. There's no problem if you're, you know, to use a back support, but sit comfortably and close the eyes. And begin by just being aware of your breath as you breathe naturally through the nose. So just feel the breath as it passes in and out of the nose. And you might notice any movement in your abdomen and your chest as you breathe naturally in and out of the nose. And now allow your awareness to rest in the area of the perineum. And that's again the area between the anus and the genitals. This is the site of the Muladhara chakra, the root chakra. So you're just gently aware of that area. And now gently think the mantra LUM. Feel the mantra LUM as a faint idea in the area of the perineum. So you can think it as you breathe in, LUM. As you breathe out, LUM. Do that for a few breaths. And now just be. And feel the light in silence in the perineum. And now moving your attention up near the base of the spine. This is another chakra, the second chakra, Svadhisthana. And here, on the in-breath, feel VAM. And on the out-breath, again, VAM, VAM. And now just be and feel the light and silence there at the base of the spine. And now with an in-breath, draw your attention up the spine to the level of the navel. And here, again, the same, the mantra is RUM. So with the in-breath, feel RUM. With the out-breath, RUM. It's just a faint idea. And now feel the silence and light there at the level of the navel. And now with another in-breath, draw the attention up the spine to the level of the heart. The Anahata Chakra, that's the heart chakra. And here, the mantra is YUM, YUM. So on the in-breath, feel YUM. On the out-breath, YUM. It's a faint idea for several breaths. And then feel the light and silence there. And now with an in-breath, draw the attention up the spine to the level of the base of the throat. And here the mantra is HUM. HUM on the in-breath, HUM on the out-breath. This is a faint idea for several breaths. And just be and feel the light and silence there. And now with another in-breath, draw the attention up into the point between the eyebrows, the Anahata Chakra. Here the mantra is OM. OM on the in-breath, OM on the out-breath. That's just a faint idea. And just be feeling the light and silence there. And now with an in-breath, feel the attention going up to the crown of the head. And here there is no mantra, just transcendent silence and the clear light of consciousness. Feel that clear light and feel your mind becoming absorbed in that light, merging in that light. And just be and now to come out of meditation, just take a few moments, sitting with your eyes closed, to come out slowly. And hopefully you felt some peace and relaxation, just a taste of what meditation can bring.
Well, vitality enhancer.
Yes, I love it. That's a very simple meditation, but it really does the trick.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Sure.
So I would like to have you tell our listeners your story of how you came to this, because you had your own pain point. You had a lot of anxiety when you found meditation.
That's true. I was following in high school. I kind of experimented with drugs, and this was way back in the 1970, and somehow I came out of that experience with a lot of anxiety. And I had had insomnia even when I was a little kid. So some tension was there from, you know, early on. And but at the same time, I had had some really deep spiritual experiences in high school. And so I was kind of searching and seeking. And in fact, I was very interested in meditation, but I didn't know how to meditate. And I went to college. And in my first quarter of college, I saw a poster of Maharshi Mahesh Yogi, the founder of the TM program. And I, you know, was intrigued. So I went to that lecture, and what they talked about really spoke to me. And so I started meditation, and that was the beginning. And from there, I went to learn to teach TM. And I taught that for about 10 years, studied in person with Maharshi for a number of years, was on his personal staff over in Europe. And, really, you know, dove into it quite extensively. And then after about 10 years of teaching that, I began to explore other forms of meditation. I ended up living in India in an ashram. And so I did the whole thing. I even went up and lived in caves in the Himalayas and just did long retreats there. So through all that,
studied with some of the...
Yeah, the yogis.
The yogis that are up there, yeah.
Exactly. And what I teach now, the effortless mind meditation, is the best of what I've learned over these 46 years of exploration. And so it's the most accessible, it's the easiest, it gives you the deepest experience. And so that's what I call effortless mind meditation.
And you have a book by the same name, I want to reiterate.
Yes.
Effortless Mind, mm-hmm. Meditate with Ease.
Right.
Now, you and I have had discussions about this before where one of the things that I think we both agree on is it's very easy to get into a peaceful state when you're out in nature, if you're in a cave or mm-hmm. you're in an ashram or you're in a church or at a retreat, and you can get into that space. You know, I've done 10-day long silent retreats where I don't speak, and it sounds so terrifying when you first start, and then you go, oh, this is great. I never want to speak again, you know, because you find that internal groundedness and such a deep peace that you mm-hmm. don't want to come out of it again. But in reality, finding that peace in the face of stress is the biggest growth edge, right?
Totally. Totally. Yeah. It's where the growth is at. Mm-hmm. I mean, you need both because mm-hmm. you do have to train your...
And you have to have your reset.
Yes, you have mm-hmm. to have a reset. You have to train your mind and body to go into that state of being. You have to touch that potential.
So you know where to go.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then, but then you have to come out and you have to bring that into your life. And that is the challenge. I will say it's easy to meditate. Integrating is another story. That takes, you know, it takes a lot of life experience, honestly.
And I know you, I've heard you say that marriage or partnership or relationship is actually the fastest track to growth that there is. Mm-hmm. But bringing meditation into that brings you what?
Well, as we just said, that brings you the reset and it brings you a touchstone. It's like what you're doing is when you meditate, you're drawing back into that state of pure potentiality. But then it's only in bringing that out into your life, your active life, where you're engaging with other people. And especially if you have an intimate partner, that's a wonderful arena for all kinds of growth and self-discovery and, you know, the growth of self-awareness. So, that's where the real growth takes place is coming out. There's an expansiveness, a connecting with yourself, with your source, with spirit, and sort of realizing that you are indeed a spiritual being. That's what can give you that experience. But then you have to come out into having the human experience and bringing that spiritual touchstone to the human experience. And that's what really makes you whole. So it's, yes.
And it's, the reason I'm ending with this point mm-hmm. is so that the peace and the vitality that our listeners felt during that very small, short meditation that you mm-hmm. just did, what I would ask is that, ladies, you now take this into whatever you're doing for the rest of your day. And really bring that as a focus of, okay, I'm going to bring this piece into my marriage or into my relationship or into my parenting or to my work. Whatever it is that you're doing for the rest of your day, make that your focus. And you'll find that your vitality meter will be off the charts. It'll go way, way up. And it's so much faster than doing it with supplements or doing it with medications or other things that are not that surging vitality, right, that mm-hmm. you can get when you actually meditate. So
wonderful.
Thank you so much for joining the Women's Vitality Summit, Ajayan.
Thank you for having me, Keisha.
So again, it's ajayan.com, ajayan.com, and the book is Effortless Mind, Meditate with Ease, and the membership site can be found at ajayan.com.
Correct. Yes.
So everybody be the most fabulous version of you that you can be. And remember to take your vitality that you got through this meditation into the rest of your day.